This is tape number 401, August the 10th, 1979, and it's side two, and it's Mae Bressel. I talked last week about the firing of Dr. Michael Bodden from the New York City coroner's office as the chief medical examiner at the time that the House Select Committee on Assassinations is issuing its report, and he was the chairman of the House Select Committee on Assassinations medical panel. Last week there was just a little bit of information on the way Dr. Bodden had handled weapons in criminal investigations that had been lost. But there's more this week, and I'd like to share it with you because of the determination of the House Select Committee to have such a prestigious committee again. I wanted to just cite some more details about Michael Bodden to set the record straight. Of course, one of the listeners from the tape sent me this marvelous front page story from the New York Post this last week. City medical examiner axed, ouster of Flaky Bodden linked to cruising film. Of course, I call Flaky Blakey and Flaky Bodden, but it's nice to see him described, at least on some front page, as Flaky Bodden. And again, they talked about his comments about Rockefeller and pretrial publicity that hampered other cases and taking movies in a morgue, a movie about homosexuals that was filmed in the New York morgue. He also was making disturbing movies with his wife, a Dr. Julianne Denson Gerber. She's founder of the Odyssey House, a place to help abuse children, but these movies were described as clinically unacceptable and just gross. A interesting conflict was taking place with Dr. Bodden that came out in the news with a man who befriended him and had the job before him, Dr. Milton Halpern. Bodden was accusing Halpern of various charges of mishandling of material in the coroner's office, and Halpern had claimed that Bodden was just interested in taking his job, that he wanted to take work from him. So that there was a conflict between the deputy there in the coroner's office in New York City and the man who held the job before him. The interesting part about that, and I mentioned that way, way back on the tapes, and this came out again in the news this week about the conflict of Bodden and Halpern, was that Halpern wrote a book, a very important book, and it was called Where Death Delights. And the very first chapter is on the bungling of the autopsy of John Kennedy's assassination and how it was done in error and it was wrong. They didn't use the best experts. And, of course, he took a position that this autopsy was outrageous. So as soon as the House Select Committee was voted money in Congress to investigate the assassination of Kennedy the second time around, Dr. Halpern died April 22, 1977. He had cancer, but he died just at the time the House was to open up the next investigation, and instead of using his material, they used his protege, Dr. Bodden, and covered it up the second time. So that conflict was going on in the New York coroner's office, and the man selected did not use the information that his predecessor and former friend had before they conflicted with each other. There also was a controversy of him regarding a Mr. Soman, a Mr. Robert Soman, who fell out of a window in 1975 when Bodden was in the coroner's office, 40 West 77th Street. He was an electrical engineer who wrote a book, an author, on accidental injuries that happened to children. He went flying out the window, and there was never any account of how high up he was or what story. There was no suicide note. There was no prior suicide talk and no medical history. And Bodden insisted on listing his death as suicide. And his wife and family were suing the city and brought out in the court and wanted to change to an accidental death because there wasn't any proof that the man had wanted to kill himself. And Bodden wouldn't work with the courts and wouldn't change the consideration that it could have been accidental, but insisted, which jeopardized the insurance for the family, he insisted that it was suicide, even though he didn't have any positive proof that it was suicide. When he was appointed deputy chief medical examiner, there was another man working with him, a Wong Ming-ru, who was qualified, and he resigned in the coroner's office when Bodden worked his way up to become chief. He didn't want to work with him. In one homicide where the gun disappeared, Bodden, we didn't have the details last week, Bodden was charged with being irresponsible. A man had tried to confess about a certain death that took place December 31st, 1977. That's just when the House Select Committee was starting. But Vaughan was deputy chief, then he attributed the death of this party to alcoholism, and finally when they exhumed the body, they found out it had been strangled. He also pressured Beth Israel Medical Center to disclose records of a former patient, and if they had complied with them, they would have been in violation of the federal law, and they wouldn't submit to his pressures. Another very controversial murder in New York City. This was a community leader by the name of Arthur Miller. He died just last June 14, 1979, and Vaughan was charged with issuing a report on the death of Miller with insufficient evidence. He was in the custody of the police, and he choked to death in Brooklyn, a black businessman. And the coroner's report said there was medical evidence that there was not excessive force found, even though he died from strangulation at the hands of the police department and was 35 years old and was healthy up to that time. And, of course, the police were overly strong. They didn't call it excessive, but what does it take to be excessive? You can only die once. And this may have been one of the reasons for the pressure on Vaughan. Now, the NAACP just this last week was fussing about the fact that the police department was completely cleared of the death of the black leader, even though he was choked to death in the custody of the police, and he was very young at the time. So Vaughan had come out with statements, you know, clearing the police department without sufficient data, even at that date. Another death of a 46-year-old man in 1978 under suspicious circumstances. The autopsy determined that he died of a ruptured spleen of unknown origin, and the office didn't go into it further. The coroner, the deputy coroner, this is Bodden in Manhattan, New York, in quotes, was unable to determine if the rupture was from natural causes or homicidal trauma. So they evidently didn't go into that very far, and that's the case where they wanted files from the methadone program, which actually had nothing to do with the rupturing of the spleen at that time and could be a homicide. And he wanted information he didn't need to solve the case and got in hot water there. There was a case, People versus Levine, where the defendant was indicted for killing a person named Marion Weinfeld. And important pieces of information about her evidence were collected by the investigators, fingernail clippings in case they could find a suspect. A dress of hers was stained with blood. She was found nude, but the dress was later found with blood, and there were fingernails that they could save, 4 scrapings, I guess, and a blue towel was with her, and a knife was found that could have done the fatal killing, and a phone cord. And these were turned over to the deputy coroner and the coroner's office in Manhattan, where Vaughan became chief medical examiner, and all items were lost, the allegations say, by Vaughan. Dr. Farrar, the New York Health Commissioner, nurse said it was Vaughan's attitude, even as the assistant there, as unknowing and uncaring. Before he was the chief medical examiner, as a deputy, he was unknowing and uncaring. And lastly, in People versus Hayes, an important murder case, there were several important pieces. They had 2 bloody knives. They had blood-stained pants and clothes, and they were all logged with the medical examiner's office October 6, 1978, and all items were lost, and they couldn't find the evidence. And Vaughan claims he never had the evidence. These cases were nude. But even though the bodies were found nude, this other material that belonged to them and possible weapons was found next to the bloody clothing and so forth. And it all disappeared. As I mentioned last week on the tape, when criminal evidence is missing, then the killers get off free for lack of evidence to prosecute. And that's exactly what happened. And I think it's important to spend this time to give you a little background on Michael Vaughan. When you read the House Select Committee cover-up and begin to order, some of you will order those hearings. They're printed now. That's Dr. Vaughan. Now, the thing that really blows me was an article in New York Times this last week, professionals across the nation shocked at Vaughan ouster. Now, he's got his buddies coming in and asking, you know, to get his job back. And, of course, who do you think the first doctor is? Dr. Thomas Noguchi, the Los Angeles County Medical Examiner, called Dr. Vaughan an intense, intelligent, idealistic scientist. I don't know how these people can say these things based upon just the information of the House Select Committee that we saw on television. Then the one that really throws me is Dr. Cyril Wecht, I refer to him as one of the few American patriots or citizens, because he got up before the House Select Committee on television. It was that, I believe, Thursday evening, and Friday the next day they canceled all public television of the committee after that time. And he accused the panel of lying, of not accepting the bullet direction, the fatal headshot coming from the front. He was in direct opposition to what Dr. Baden's testimony was on the medical evidence. And this is Silwek's comment in the New York Times. Dr. Silwek, a highly respected forensic pathologist, said he talked with colleagues all over the country. All of them expressed their amazement that something like this could happen to a man of Dr. Baden's stature. Dr. Weck said he believed the ouster was an obviously superficial attempt to rationalize a despicable action, adding that it was a political chicanery of some sort of political vindictiveness. Now, how can Cyril Weck, who opposed the whole premise upon which Baden worked at the House Select Committee on Assassinations, who accused them of covering up, he said, just for once, be honest, accept the truth, he told the panel, and yet the very man in charge of drawing and redrawing those ballistic pieces of evidence and to testify that there were no fatal headshots from the front and so forth, Cyril Weck is in direct opposition, defending Baden. He should just stay out of New York politics, given all the cases that I just listed there, that they must have piled up that and more. Cyril Weck, who accuses him professionally of a job before the House Select Committee, and Thomas Noguchi, who knew the fatal headshots came with his, on his autopsy from Robert Kennedy's assassination from the back of the head, knowing where they came from, each of these men has been part of the crime of investigating Robert Kennedy's murder and John Kennedy's murder, and yet they come to the defense of a medical examiner who's been part of the cover-up. So I just wonder how much integrity these people have individually or as a personal basis. They may like him, but I know that Cyril Weck took opposition to what the committee was doing, so I don't know why he puts himself to be quoted in the New York Times as outraged at what happened this past week or two. Now for my favorite news story of the week. To precede that story, it's a Jack Anderson article that you may or may not have seen in your newspapers. It was syndicated this past week, but to open that up, I just want to quote Time Magazine. October the 19th, 1970, a woman by the name of Frances Knight, who's been working in the State Department since 1955, was talking about the State Department and the passport office. This is in 1970. She says, "The State Department is a cesspool of intrigue, political assassinations, and character assassinations. It permeates the department." Well, this last week, Friday, August the 3rd, 1979, Jack Anderson has had a column, part of it printed in the San Francisco Chronicle, but all of it in the San Jose Mercury, that begins, "Are the Nazi horrors, are the horrors of Nazi Germany being relived in South America through an unholy alliance between the right-wing totalitarian regimes and the war criminals from Adolf Hitler's Third Reich?" Now, as I read to you from the Anderson article verbatim, you'll think that I'm writing that, but that's Jack Anderson saying that Nazi war criminals are living in South America and are from the Third Reich. He said a top secret Senate report raises the disquieting possibility. He goes on to say that there's torture being used by military dictators of Latin countries, unspeakable methods of gaining information from their political opponents. Women are raped repeatedly while their husbands are forced to watch. Babies are tortured in front of their parents. Uncooperative suspects are asphyxiated in piles of excrement or rotated to death over barbecue pits. He said it's no coincidence that these Nazis have havens for South American torture and so forth. He says they went to this South American colony in 1945 out of Hitler's Germany, and competent sources have told them about their inhuman expertise using the secret police of their adopted country, and they're directed by Hitler-style torture and extermination of political dissidents, the killing of them and the torturing. The countries are Chile, Paraguay, Uruguay, Brazil, and Argentina. They're known in the International Assassination Consortium, known as Operation Condor. Condors has three phases. First section identifies your common enemies in foreign countries. The second, and that includes inside the United States, that the Nazis have enemies in here. Secondly, they track them down and finally eliminate them. And he gives the example of the death of Orlando Letelier in Washington. Then Jack Anderson goes on and gives the name of the group that I have done for you in tapes last April, April 27th, and the one before, I believe, the week before, tapes 385 and 386, are on Colonial Dignitad. Those of you that don't have the tapes, I won't repeat it. Those of you who have it, look up your printed sheets for April 1979, tapes 385 and 386. Now, this is the first time that the establishment media, and Anderson is the establishment media, has mentioned the colony, which the San Francisco Chronicle left out. They talk about the colony, but not Colonia Dignitat. And you see, that is the area that I talked about that Martin Bormann was at in 1962 when Jim Jones was in Brazil. And the book for Treason for My Daily Bread suggests that Bormann was sending the assassin to meet Clay Shaw for that fatal headshot at Dealey Plaza where John Kennedy was killed. Now, this team of assassins under the Operation Condor selects their target, selects the people to be gunned down and how to do it. And I will go a little more in review for you my tapes on Jim Jones and Jonestown, where I believe he worked with these people from Brazil, Argentina, and so forth, and that when he said die with dignity, there was a similarity between La Dignitad. Jack Anderson said that the German personnel and the Gestapo members and the SS officers are down at Colonia Dignitad. It's established on a 3,000-acre tract, actually 7,500 acres, bearing the name La Dignitad. That's noble. It's a refugee German Luftwaffe camp run by officers since the end of World War II. The CIA has identified the leader as Franz Pfeiffer Richter, known as the commander. Now, I don't know if that's the same Richter. A Richter left by the U-2 boats that I mentioned in before, Carl von Richter, who went down to South America, Argentina, and Antarctica with Adolf Hitler. And I mentioned the fact that he has a son in New York that I was told was influential in taking people that were drugged off the streets and different people who were given X amount of money and sent down to South America. And a person who told me about was afraid that they were hypnotized and experimented upon and didn't return. It may be a coincidence, but the name of Bormann and Mengele's and so forth are not aliases. They used their names after World War II. And I wonder if Richter is related to that Richter that I was told about. He runs this camp in quotes, a military fashion. The men wear uniforms and maintain close ties with the Chilean military officials. The colony maintains complete autonomy over its territory. Remember I said Colonia Dignitat borders on Argentina, so that if somebody by Chile comes to see what's going on, they can flee to Argentina. They have their own airport, their own means of exit. If anyone comes from the Argentine side, they can go farther into Chile. He says the main source of livelihood for its 250 men, women, and children is a large dairy farm. Remember, I compared to Jonestown that they were really orphanages and religious church fronts that were fronts for the torture and experimentation and the assassination teams. He said they have German-made communications equipment to maintain contact with pro-Nazi elements throughout South America and Europe. Jim Jones had his own air tower and communications with the CIA in all of South America and the United States. It goes on to say the DINA, the Chilean military's Tinhorn Gestapo, used the colony's international contacts to further their murderous work in foreign countries. And then Jack Anderson says Adolf Hitler's 1,000-year Reich may not have perished in the rubble of Berlin after all. That sounds like May Bressel wrote that statement. In October 1973, there was an expose from the French newspaper Le Monde that said that former members of the Allende government were in Chile and preparing to release a report linking Henry Kissinger and top American officials to the overthrow of Allende. Allende was overthrown in 1973, and that was the year that Jim Jones also moved down and began to build that agricultural commune at Jonestown with the CIA, and Chile then was in the hands of Pinochet and the Nazis. Lamont said that the bombshell that they were to expose is that a group of former Chilean ambassadors, I say, in Rome met, there were 11 leaders, and that they had a release to say, a text that in 1970, Henry Kissinger planned to overthrow Salvador Allende. I'm always asked, why do you believe Henry Kissinger's a Nazi and not a Jew? Allende was not so far left that he had to be eliminated, but Pinochet and the Nazis were put into power, and they were flying swastikas in 1973, as soon as Allende was murdered. As early as 1970, Henry Kissinger is going to overthrow Allende, but the plan, even though it was formulated in 1970, it was delayed for 3 years. The State Department asked them to wait, and then the Kissinger plan was put into effect earlier in 1973, early in that year, as soon as Allende was reelected. I guess they were going to wait to see whether or not he won the elections, and if he was elected, he had to be killed. And there's a full report in Le Monde, this was in October of 1973, of the plans of Henry Kissinger working with the Nixon administration, and this is before Nixon left office, to put Pinochet and the Nazis into power. There have been appeals to the United Nations, and I've given you a lot of information, not enough, but a lot of it on Colonial Dignitat, and I think, as I say, look up those tapes. Now, they're important for many reasons. First of all, it was 7 years ago, 1972, just August 72. This is the anniversary of it. In fact, August the 11th, 72, is when, well, July 11th is when I finished my article in The Realist for Paul Krasner, and August the 11th was when it was printed. 7 years ago was my first printed article called Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? But it went beyond Martha Mitchell, and it went to the Nazi connections. And the entire article, The American Assassin and How Nixon Really Came to Power, if you reread it, because many of you do have that article, and for those of you that don't have it, I'll have to get reprints made one of these days, if I can get enough cash put together to get them and sell them just the cost, I'll do that, because you should have that article on the effort I was trying to make in 1972 to the fascism, the Nazis behind Richard Nixon, the role he played for them. And you see, this Nazi Kissinger in 70 was planning to kill Allende and waited. But the Nazis behind Richard Nixon, the way he came to power, the Nazis behind the Kennedy assassination, the Nazis behind the assassination teams, and then even the conservative, Miss Knight from the State Department, saying that the State Department was just one road of assassinations. The Jack Anderson article is the first establishment account, as I say, for the Nazis in South America, the assassination teams. And then if you take the research I did on Jim Jones, Jonestown, Colonial Dignitat tapes, those tapes, and some of you are new subscribers every week or so, so I just have to give the number an update, and if it's confusing for you, you will have or have the list of different tapes on Jim Jones, or the book Treason for My Daily Bread, The Role of Martin Bormann in the Assassination Teams, and over and over again, the stress of the Nazi assassination teams. Operation Condor existed in Chile and in Argentina. It existed through Richard Nixon's office in Whittier. It existed in Jonestown and in Chile. And I believe that these assassination teams left Oaxaca, Mexico, after they were exposed in 1970 and continued their plans of international assassinations down in this very private compound that was, in quotes, a religious Christian church group planning assassinations. Jimmy Carter, as I said at the beginning of this tape, wants to turn the world Christian. What kind of Christians does he want to run the world? That would be an interesting question, because the church fronts have been the fronts for missionaries who are trained assassins who got in and out of customs and places because they were disguised as members of the Christian church. Supporting this South American assassination team and the links of, again, to Bormann and the Kennedy assassination and Argentine and Chile, the book Were We Controlled, the alias Lincoln Lawrence was used. Most of you know now that the man who wrote it, his name was Arthur Ford. But a big part of the book, Were We Controlled, that came out in 1967, it was about the connections between Argentine and South America, the assassination teams. He talks on page 118 about the 51 companies that lent money to Allied, which was a branch of the Bunge Corporation and had investments that were directly linked to the stock market the day that John Kennedy was killed. He called the Bunge Corporation the octopus. It would make a James Bond fantasy, and it goes into the grain business and the manipulation of the stock markets and the effect of their $2 billion empire on 80 different countries, and how they made money by selling early in the morning of November 22, 1963, and bring in huge profits just before the president was killed. He said the American Bunge Corporation is a privately held giant, financially controlled by a group of shareholders with headquarters in Argentina, with Germanic tones and so forth. Members of the Born family in Argentina are believed to be the biggest shareholders. The Bunge and the Born founders immigrated from Europe to Argentine, and it goes into their Belgian, German background and the role that they had in making millions of dollars by selling at the time of the Kennedy assassination, the day that John Kennedy was assassinated. This goes into operation control and mind control and the manipulation of agents involved in this assassination. And of course, he's talking about the Bunge Corporation with headquarters both in Argentine and in New Orleans. And Lee Harvey Oswald was in New Orleans, and he claims that he was identified as the assassin, that he was controlled and a sleeper, and that this huge German Nazi group between Argentine, New Jersey, and New Orleans had a role in both the behavior of Jack Ruby and in the behavior of Lee Harvey Oswald, in making Lee Harvey Oswald the patsy in that case. And he talks about Oswald's trips to Mexico, and of course the assassination teams were down in Mexico at least up until 72-73. In fact, persons from La Siempre, a newspaper down there, had pictures of Lee Harvey Oswald with the various assassination teams. There were three teams of five each, and they used to call Mexico America's rifle range because so many people practice shooting down there. People, as I say, from La Siempre had pictures that were later taken and probably destroyed of Oswald with these other assassination teams, these marksmen. I talked in past tapes on the links of South Africa to Jonestown, to Germany, and to Colonial Dignidad, that Operation Condor, the assassination teams. I've talked about that. I also have a little booklet called From Chile to Johannesburg, South Africa, the CIA Advances, and it tells again the role of Henry Kissinger and how after Chile was overthrown and destabilized, he sent Nathaniel Davis down to Africa to begin the destabilization down there once Allende was killed, and it tells about the racism of Henry Kissinger and how he's used down in the various African countries and appointments. Dean Hinton was appointed ambassador to Zaire. He worked with the AID in Guatemala. And then Mr. Davis was sent to Africa after Allende was killed. And it tells about moving these agents around from Chile to South Africa under the CIA and Henry Kissinger. One of the persons in South Africa who belonged to this Nazi enclave was John Forster. Many of you don't know that, but he was in prison for 3 years as a Nazi sympathizer, and then went on to be Prime Minister of South Africa. And for 12 years, he was called the Butcher of Soweto. He instigated the apartheid after World War II. He started concentration camp separation of the races, and it was the Afrikaners, the Broederband group, that became part of this Nazi cult by 1930. They began to get their muscle in 1919 when World War II was over and Galen began rearming clandestinely the German machine, and the apartheid began in 1919, got its muscle in 1930, and John Forster, who has direct links to the Chilean junta and to the Nazis and to Germany itself, was a prisoner, a Nazi sympathizer during the past war. If any of you want to write to Jack Anderson or send tapes to Jack Anderson or disseminate this information, I don't think you should let what he said just drop there. Let him know there's more, and I'll join you in the process, but I can't do it alone. It's up to you to use the material if you have the time and energy and if you're so inclined. Our time is up. Another week tucked away. I'll be back with you next week. This is Mae Breslin, Carmel, and you take care of yourselves until next week.